says I come to your town and we beat your team.
You're now tuned in to one of the realest sports podcasts for Kentucky basketball.
Three in the air. Good again.
And football.
The Kentucky defense steps up again.
Just an opinionated Kentucky sports fan podcast.
Maybe that's a Kentucky accent.
With Jay Hayes and J.D. Hall. Ooh. This is what we do.
Let's go.
Religiously Kentucky.
What is up? I'm your guy, Jay Hayes, and he is...
His voice of reason, J.D. Hall.
And we are Religiously Kentucky here with a special guest.
You're going to laugh every time I say that, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I'm adding laughter sound bites. I might add a little circus. I mean, you never know, but special guest in the building.
That's the fact, Jack!
No one other than Jack Pilgrim of KSR and Source to Say Podcast. What is up, Jack?
Not a whole lot. I appreciate you guys having me.
I appreciate you coming through. Yeah, definitely. Before we jump into the actual conversation, I saw some of your tweets earlier and about Sevier the historian Willer. and a comparison of De'Aaron Fox and speed. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
So what's up with that? This very likable kid.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of always been his thing. You go during the, you know, recruiting process and all that, I went back and watched some of his old press conferences and all that, and he's always been kind of that bubbly, just bright personality type guy. And so I kind of knew that we would be getting something to that effect in his first introductory press conference, kind of his first welcome into the program. But I mean, it was just quote after quote, memorable statement after memorable statement. It was like, goodness, like this kid is just, I mean, he's just about as special as it gets, just in terms of personality. And he, you know, it's one thing to say, oh yeah, John Calipari has a history of point guards, you know, John Wall, and, you know, name some of the bigger name guys, but he was just going come to some of the deep cuts as well. I mean, he was in, I think during his commitment with Jeff Goodman, they were talking about, you know, they just added Ty Washington. What does that do to you? And he was like, well, you know, you need to remember that John Calipari is kind of one of the first guys to try out the two-point guard lineup.
Facts.
And that quote pulled up, and he was like, John Wall, Eric Bledsoe, Derrick Rose, Chris Douglas Roberts, Jamal Murray, who plays point guard in the NBA, with Tyler Ulis, De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk, Isaiah Briscoe with Jamal Murray and Tyler Ulis, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Kwai. Like, off the top of his head, on his long spiel, it was like, man, this is about as impressive as it gets. So yeah, he's going to be a fan favorite if nothing else, just for personality.
He's definitely hit a home run.
Yeah.
With his commitment video with Goodman and his press conference and the stuff he did on Zoom today with the sports media, because like everybody was just gushing over the kid and how good he was in that setting. So
yeah.
I was like,
whoa, it's gonna be fun.
De'Aaron Fox speed, whoa. And then I was like, I like it. I like that when you can come out and say that, you know.
Right. Well, the quote that was my favorite was, they asked, well, you know, you go on the Georgia website and they say you're 5'10", but you go on all your recruiting, you go on all the recruiting documentation, all that, they say you're 5'8". He said, well, with no shoes on, I'm 5'8", 5'9", whatever you want to call me.
5'9", yeah.
But he said, but do you play basketball in shoes?
Yes.
All right, well, I'm 5'10". I'm 5'10", so
I'm going to start living that then, because I'm, you know,
that's right.
Just a shade, like a sliver under 6 foot and bare feet. So
now
put my shoes on. I'm 6'1".
You are. You're 6'1".
Yeah, I'm 6'1".
From here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm 10 foot, always. Attitude-wise, right. So with the Ty Washington commit and Sevier Willer commit, are we complete? I mean, other than Keon Brooks and Mintz making decisions to stay, are we complete?
Well, I was kind of looking at the depth chart, and I was kind of thinking that there might be a hole there at that backup point guard spot if Davion Mintz does not come back. But I think Cal doesn't want to be in a position where he was last year, where there wasn't enough pieces, right, and you kind of got tied with nothing. If you don't hit home runs, if Sevier Willer isn't a home run, or Ty Washington isn't ready yet as a freshman point guard, do you feel confident enough in, say, Kellen Grady to, you know, break off the floor every once in a while, or you know whatever the case is, CJ Frederick is comfortable putting the ball on the floor every once in a while as well. But are you confident enough in that if you don't get Davion Mintz back. And I'm kind of under the assumption that it's going to be a waiting game with Mintz. And then if need be, you could always add a reclass guy at the end of the day from 2022 as kind of just a, if he's ready to be a 2-year player and understanding that, hey, we're not bringing you in to be a lead the show from day one. You're bringing you in to kind of be our backup guy, get a year under your belt in the system before taking off in 2022, which that could benefit a guy like Sky Clark or Jaden Bradley or somebody like that. But you just don't know with the transfer portal right now, with who is pulling their name out of the NBA draft. I mean, we're still a month and a half, 2 months away from real finalized decisions. I think officially I'm about a month and a half away from official decisions. So it's just so early to say anything's finalized. I would like to think that Mintz does come back, and then that at that point you would have your backup point guard, your kind of spark plug shooter off the bench, score with the primary ball handler to kind of complement guys like CJ Frederick and Dante Allen and those sorts of guys. So I would like to think that would be the final move, but until we get a final decision from him, it's kind of just, it's too early, I think, to say anything's finalized yet.
Right.
Well, and I think I saw something on Twitter just a little while ago that Coach O and Chin have kind of hinted at the fact that they're not done recruiting anyway, and they're looking at using all 13 scholarships this year, which, if I'm remembering right, Cal, since he's been here, has never used all 13 scholarships in a season.
Never. Yeah.
So that'd be something different, maybe a way that he's changing his recruiting to where he has that full scholarship load used, and he doesn't have a situation like this past season where you don't have somebody that you can bring in if somebody's struggling or hurt or whatever. So I thought that was kind of interesting when I saw that, because when you're looking at, you got six guys for three spots in the backcourt if Mintz comes back, you got six guys in the front court for two spots if Brooks comes back, you add a third in, you're already looking at having issues trying to keep everybody happy and get everybody minutes that deserves to get minutes, and you add another guy in there, it's just gonna make it tougher, even though it's, as long as they come in with the knowledge that they may not get a whole lot of time on the floor, it can be a good thing. But we saw that with Cameron Fletcher this year. He thought he deserved more. He probably did. When you play so many minutes in the early in the season, then you go to not playing, and then like I get it. It's hard to work through that kind of stuff when you have all these guys that just think they deserve to be out there on the floor.
Yeah. I've been kind of preaching this whole offseason that I think Cal's recruiting philosophy, if it hasn't already changed, it's probably going to be in the process of changing to, he's going to go after the top five, top 10 kids, the can't miss, surefire one and done. You get them, you're happy, and I think that includes guys like Ty Washington, just those fringe, that they're capable of being a one and done and being an immediate impact guy. Maybe staying away from the 10, 12 to 20-ish range, maybe 25-ish range, where those guys are technically five stars and they might look at themselves in the mirrors and say, in the mirror and say, I'm a one and done. I broke all these high school records. I was the superstar, at my high school, McDonald's All-American, Jordan, I deserve to be this, even though they're not. I think Cal is kind of fed up with those type of guys, and I wouldn't be shocked if we start getting the can't miss, they're going to go after the top end can't miss guys, and instead of the 11 to 25-ish 30-ish range kids, use those spots for transfer portal kids. And if you're 30 to 50 or 55 or whatever, the Bryce Hopkins level of talent,
Lance Ware.
Those type of guys where Cal can look at them and say, look, if you come in and you're Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Tyler Hero, by all means, be it. We would love to see that. But you need to come in under the assumption that you are not a one and done. This is a multi-year project. We want to develop you over the course of a multi-year thing. And I know that kind of goes against what Cal has said, over and over. I'm never going to promise anything. I'm going to always give everybody opportunities, and that's fine. But I just think there's something to be said about a kid coming in, understanding that they are not a one and done, knowing that this is a long-term project, as opposed to let's get in and get out of there in 8 months. And, EJ Montgomery's of the world, where you just kind of, no matter what the case was, he was leaving after a sophomore year, no matter how poorly he played or whatever the case was, whatever his mock draft, draft status was, he was leaving. Isaiah Bracco, those type of guys, they have their mind made up going into a year. And I just think that mindset isn't a very healthy way, a healthy approach for, you know, roster construction. I think that's something that Kentucky has struggled with. Guys like Johnny Juzang, you know, the guys that they kind of pencil in as multi-year guys, and they don't think that in their head. And, you know, whether that be how you recruited them or how you pitched it to them, they in their mind think that they're, you know, better than they are, or ready to produce at a higher level than they are. And then that's when we get into the, well, if I can't do it in 1 year at Kentucky, I guess I got to go elsewhere, or I guess I'm just, you know, I got to go pro. I got to figure out how to make that happen. So that, I think things just need to be a little bit more clear on the, on, you know, during the recruiting process.
Right.
And I think that's what we're going to be seeing moving forward.
And I know Cal has said that he wouldn't platoon again, but after coming off a year like this and supposedly going to use all the scholarship, could we see something like that coming?
Well, if you get, you get Keon back, and, you know, goodness, I just don't see any scenario where Isaiah Jackson comes back, but say he shocks everybody and comes back, and Keon does ultimately come back. I think you, that's a one or the other type deal. I just don't see a scenario where Keon comes back to be a role player. But in this big dream fantasy land scenario, you could potentially have a backup, a set, you know, a secondary reserve lineup of Davion Mintz, CJ Frederick, Dante Allen, Keon Brooks, and Damian Collins, which, you know, they, you look at
that's
that
pretty good. That's a pretty good starting line.
Or a Jacob Toppin or a Lance Ware, or, you know, guys that, yeah, you, you could rely on to be high level difference makers at, in that second lineup. Where, you know, I don't know if Cal will ever go back to doing the platoon thing. But the idea of it isn't as far fetched as you think.
I think we hold on to these great ideas after the year we just had. We try to hold on to something like, let's platoon. You know, so
I'm
it's
not against the platoon.
It's a reach.
I like it.
Right.
You know,
it just, so, you know, Cal came out and was like, hell no. No, I'm done. I'm done with that shit, you know.
But like we talked just before this started, he did that because he didn't think he'd ever be in the situation where he had that many dudes on the roster who deserved to be on the floor.
Right. And we never thought we'd see a year like we just had either. So, you know, the turnaround year, could we platoon? I mean, so you never know. But I'll add circus music to that, this little part of it.
Yeah, because you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. And if, and if we do get Mintz and Brooks back, there's a lot of different lineup combinations that we can, that they'll be able to go to as well, you know, because you have all the shooters in the backcourt. You've got Toppin and you got Brooks and you got Hopkins at the four. You got Collins, who, from what I've read and heard from people, that he has that ability to stretch the floor a little bit and move out and shoot the ball. You got the banger and Shibwe. You got the banger who, and probably Ware, you know, another physical person down there in the post. So there's a lot of different combinations they can go with, where I don't think we'll see the, you know, three guys out there on the floor that can't shoot as your guards at any time, like we saw at times this past year when you had Askew, Clark, and Boston when they were all struggling to shoot the ball. And defenses didn't have to respect any of that. I don't think we'll be in that situation where Frederick and Allen or Grady or Washington are going to all be struggling to shoot the ball in every game.
I think that's kind of the most intriguing aspect of this roster is there's something for if you're you know, if your freshmen are struggling, you could go no freshman in the lineup. You know, Davion Mintz comes back and you could have the most experienced lineup in college basketball. If you you know, you need a bruiser or two, you could throw Bryce Hopkins at the four and Oscar Tshiebwe at the five, you know, two guys that are very comfortable, you know, kind of banging in the post, throwing elbows and getting physical. If you just need three straight up shooters, four straight up shooters, you know, Kellen Grady's 6'5", 6'6", CJ Frederick 6'4". It's Dante Allen, you know, has some experience at the three or whatever. You could go Ty Washington or Davion Mintz, whoever you want. You know, Ty, CJ Frederick, Kellen Grady, Dante Allen, all four in the lineup at the same time. There's just so, you know, you want shooting, there's a lineup for that. If you want experience, there's a lineup for that. Length, athleticism, you know, Damian Collins, those, you know, Keon Brooks at the four, whatever. There's a lot of flexibility and versatility with the lineup if you want to, you know, depending on what you need. It doesn't really feel like there are many flaws And, you know, I don't know if it has enough top end talent to be a, you know, top five team, you know, can't miss, you know, it needed a Jaden Hardy or a, you know, a high profile guy like that to be that can't miss contender Final Four type team. But it's really hard to get nitpicky with the role players, with the starting caliber players that you can't really find that many holes in this roster. And that's those type of teams are usually built pretty well for, you know, March. There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of, you know, talent up top, talent, you know, kind of lining the roster. So,
well, there's not a big drop off.
Right. It might be some struggles earlier in the year, but this might be one of those teams that really start clicking well at the end of the season. The guys that need to be turning it on, the Damian Collins of the world, and, you know, those type of guys will, you know, kind of have that in their bag, you know, by March, you know, February, March or so, and then kind of turn things up for tournament time. It feels like this team might be built for March Madness.
So, with saying Brooks and Mintz both come back, how close is this team to the Final Four?
You know, anything can happen when you get to March.
Right.
It's one of those things, but I think that would be more of an Elite Eight, Sweet 16 level roster. Like I said, I just feel they missed on a Paolo Banchero or a Jaden Hardy. I think those were the two guys that I think Paolo was a swing and miss by the coaching staff, the recruiting process. I thought Jaden Hardy, I think they kind of let up. They thought that they had him kind of in the bag for a long time. And when the G League kind of came offering, they were kind of like, well, guess it's just a lost cause. No, you know, nothing we can do about it until these last couple weeks, month or two. Right. When it was like, well, you know, we got Coach O coming back, you know, maybe we could do some, you know, make some late magic. And obviously it was too late, but
did they make any progress?
For sure. Well, UCLA established itself as the college, if it wasn't the G League. And I thought that was the most frustrating part of it is you had Jaden Hardy that was almost ready to commit back in 2019. I mean, UK played out in Vegas for that horrible event. It was they played Utah and they played Ohio State and they lost.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We were playing at like 3 o'clock in the morning. It was the worst event.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, thank God. It was the worst event I've ever been a part of. But during that trip, they actually practice at Coronado High School where Jaden Hardy plays. His coach was there. His dad was there. His brother was there. Jaden was there. Obviously, they're watching. And I sat and I was talking to Jaden. I was talking to his coach. And I talked to his dad. I was standing on the sideline. And they might as well have been committed. I mean, the way they were talking and like Jaden, do you like how you're going to be used in this? Yeah, or, you know, it was like they're talking in definitives.
Right.
I left that day, and I said, "There's no way he's not a Wildcat. There's no way Kentucky can screw this up. He is a done deal Kentucky Wildcat. There's just no way that you could lose that much ground so quickly for a guy that is just in love with the program, in love with the coaching staff, and all that. And somehow, not only did they lose him to the G League, they lost him at one point to UCLA. UCLA established itself as if it's not the G League, it's Mick Cronin, UCLA. And I'm like, man, that's an epic failure on the coaching staff. And I don't know who to blame for it. I don't know if it was Joel Justice did a great job kind of building up that foundation and establishing that relationship early. But there are rumors that contact died out. Like once he kind of thought it was a done deal, he said, all right, well, we got him. Nothing else we need to do. Right. I don't need to hit this kid up anymore. You know, there were some of those rumors, whether it's a Cal not being able to finish or, you know, not having the work ethic that he used to or whatever. There were a lot of rumors about stuff like that. And I think that was part of the big push in getting guys like Coach O and a new kind of fresh brand of, you know, Chin Coleman, those type of guys to be able to hold, you know, Cal accountable. If he's not, you know, giving his all, you know what Coach O is going to give you on the recruiting trail. Coach Coleman is one of the most well-respected guys in grassroots basketball and, you know, city of Chicago, which is just a hotbed of talents. So I think UK needed guys like that, you know, back in this program. But I think those two prospects in particular, Paolo, who is my favorite prospect at the college level, I think he's going to be a superstar at Duke as much as that hurts. I think, you know, I was praying that the G League would come calling and kind of steal him away and we'd never have to see him work Duke across his chest. But unfortunately, I think he's going to be very, very good. And I think it was a big mistake on Kentucky's part to not do whatever it takes and kind of seal the deal with him. So I think we're missing those type of talents to be the can't miss surefire Final Four type teams, but I think you're getting about as good as you could possibly ask for if you get Damian Mintz and Keon Brooks. I think the foundation of that roster is pretty damn good.
Well, speaking of Paolo, because there was a time there, it was Kentucky, he was a lock to Kentucky. Everybody thought that's where he's going. What happened in that situation that changed that flipped him to go to Duke?
Well, I don't know if you remember that Big Blue Madness of 2019. Cade was there. Paolo was there. Terrence Clark was there, who had just committed. He was just fresh off of a commitment. And I think Lance Ware was there as well. I think some other 2022 kids were there as well. But I mean, it was just an absolutely loaded class. Just one of the biggest in Big Blue Madness history. And that was right when everybody was talking about Paolo as a potential reclass guy. There were rumblings, like very, very serious talk after the fact that Cade and Paolo both committed on their official visits to Kentucky. They were out at parties and hanging out on campus, and you know, everybody was like, "Oh, are you coming to Kentucky?" And they were like, "Yeah, I just committed tonight. I'm coming. I'm on my way." There were a lot of people afterward that were saying like, "Yeah, I talked about it." Cade said that he was ready to go. He was going to announce his commitment this week, and there was a lot of talk. That's why Evan Daniels at that time put in a pick for Cade to Kentucky, because he had heard those same things, that he had committed on his visit and was going to announce like in the next couple days after the fact. And I think he went home and talked to his family about it, and his mom, I think, kind of told him to take a step back and say, "Hey, really, really glad that you like Kentucky, but you still have a couple more official visits to make. Let's be respectful to all the other, schools involved and the other coaches that have spent a lot of time on you. And let's really be respectful to everybody else involved, because you are Cade Cunningham. And obviously Paolo, if he were involved, there was talk about him reclassifying. It'd be those two this past season. And, you know, if not, at worst, we'd have him for this year. So, I think it was just more of he talked over to his family, and it was I think it just allowed more other schools to kind of sweep in. And guy like Coach K was able to come in and sell the brotherhood thing and all that.
That's a joke to me, but
yeah.
But it's working.
I think those two recruitments in particular, not Cade, but Jaden and Paolo, are just two that I'll always look at with this class. I'm hoping for the best with this team. I think they do have a lot of good potential. I think this has been a really successful offseason for Cal, but really, really one of those, man, what if scenarios. If Kentucky was able to lock those two up early and build the other transfers, the CJ Fredericks and those type of guys around those pieces. It's just one of those, oh man, that's just that's the swaggy early John Calipari roster that really makes you go, wow, like that's Final Four right there. So I'll be able to be convinced that this team could be there by the end of the summer, hearing workouts and all that. But I'm definitely not there yet. Still some things that need to be finalized, and I need to see it and hear about it with my own eyes and ears before jumping on the expectation train like I did last offseason. I'm not
right.
And maybe those two misses were a lot of the catalyst for the changes we saw with the coaching staff. We all know Cal's not going to, kick them out. He's not going to fire anybody. He's not going to just get rid of someone. Mm-hmm. But to me, if Justice did that with Hardy, where he kind of just backed off and stopped communicating with him when he thought he had him locked up, and then they let Coach K and Duke come in and steal Bancaro from him, I don't see any situation where Cal would be too happy with that, with your two guys and Barbie and Justice letting that happen.
Well, Paolo is a Barbie guy. I like Barbie. He's a great dude, but I've kind of always been that if you have a can't miss guy like Paolo, you don't put your third, second best recruiter. Right. I mean, Cal needed to look at Jaden Hardy and, maybe let them do some of the background, phone calls and text messages and stuff that Cal can't get to, but that needed to be Cal looking at those two players and saying, you guys are mine. Like I am your lead recruiter. We're obviously going to be in all in effort. Some of the other coaches are going to be in touch with you and kind of do some of the other, legwork that I can't necessarily get to, but you guys are my recruits. Like I am your all's lead recruiter. I've never understood the mindset of you know, can't miss players of that magnitude, letting it be, you know, letting some other, some anybody else but your main closure, your main guy be the lead guy. I never agreed with that, but you know, there were some rumors, you know, same thing with Justin Powell, that I think Joel was in charge of that one and kind of thought it was a done deal, ready to go, and let that one slip out and ended up, you know, that there's a lot of stuff back behind the scenes stuff that happened with that. I think his, just a lot of excess stuff that I think didn't make that as much of an appealing move as Cal wanted, but I do think Cal was ready to take him and wanted him to commit. And I think that was another one of those that he just got lost. Like they had him ready to go and they lost him. And I think that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back
and there was a meltdown by Kentucky fans when that happened.
Yeah.
Like, especially because he went to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, now me, I'm happy. I would take Frederick over Powell anyway.
Right.
Because he's proven over two seasons at Iowa to do it. Powell did it over 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much smaller sample size of success than what you get from CJ Frederick. So yeah. To me, I think Frederick is better anyway, bringing him in, because you're not relying on somebody who doesn't have the track record of being able to do it on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and I think it was, are you bringing in Justin Powell to be your lead point guard? And I talked to a lot of people very early in the process that were really skeptical of him being the guy. Like, Powell, some of the, you know, kind of background stuff, Powell said, I want to be the starting point guard wherever I go. I want to be the guy wherever I go. And it was so early in the process. That was just like right when Marcus Carr put his name in the portal. Somebody I talked to said, look, by the end of the summer, Powell might not even be a top 25, top 30 transfer in America. Like, do you want to take the guy early just because he's a homegrown kid? Just right. Because he's, you know, he has proven it at Auburn over a very small, like you said, small sample size, but there's a long injury, you know, history of injury, but dating back to his high school career, just very small, you know, yes, in that small sample size, he was fantastic. And I think that really intrigued Cal. And he was a take. Like, if he was ready to commit, he would be a Wildcat. But I think there was just, it was just one of those things that did you really want to kind of settle on your starting point guard for next year, 2 weeks after the season ended, 3 weeks after the season ended, or were you comfortable kind of waiting out a little bit and finding a Ty Washington that just kind of fell into their lap you know, somebody that I know the coaching staff is very optimistic about and excited about. And then, you know, a Savory Wheeler, who is kind of a high risk, high reward type guy. You know, I still have my doubts about who he is as a player and kind of how good he can be at that position. But that's kind of you can feel a little bit more comfortable having Ty Washington signed on, ready to go. You're able to take a little bit more of a risk with a guy like Xavier Wheeler that, you know, if you take Justin Powell as your lead guy from day one, do you miss out on Ty Washington? Do you miss out on some of the other Marcus Carr? You know, he's not an option anymore, but at that time, were you willing to give up the possibility of getting a guy like that down the road because right. You just need a guy right now, 2 weeks after the season ended? And I think that was kind of a back and forth between the coaching staff that ultimately ended up with Powell going to Tennessee. And that recruitment in particular, I think, was a straw that broke the camel's back with just the kind of hit reset on the coaching staff, for sure.
Talk about losing recruits. Kind of switching gears a little bit, though. Homesickness. Was that the main reason for Nolan Hickman to commit to Gonzaga?
And I think that was something that was really blown out of proportion that they, you know, I talked to his dad. I was very close with his dad. When I was down in Memphis at the Iverson Classic, I talked to his dad for 2-3 hours. I mean, I really close with him, and I got a lot of the ins and outs of the recruitment and what actually happened and those sorts of things. It was never just about homesickness. And in that story that I wrote with all the quotes from him, it was like that was like the second or third thing that was even discussed. It was coaching staff. It was him being away from You know, his dad said that, you know, they sent him to Mount Pleasant, Utah, where as soon as he got there, they got put on lockdown. He said that it was like a modern day jail. They basically weren't able to leave their dorms the entire year. You know, they weren't able to walk around on campus. It was basically they were in their dorm, you know, all their homework, all their, you know, classwork was online. And then they would, you know, leave for the weekend to go on these games where it was under strict, you know, they weren't able to leave the hotel rooms. They would, you know, be in isolation at the dorm. They'd travel to wherever they were going, and then they'd be in isolation at the, you know, in their dorms. And then it was just kind of a whole year of that. So a lot of them, you know, a lot of fans are like, how can a kid be homesick before he even gets on campus? Right. It wasn't that he was homesick from being at Kentucky. It was he was homesick from his own family. On top of the way his dad described it to me was, we committed to Kentucky because Tony Barbie did a phenomenal job recruiting him. Joel Justice was the second recruiter. Some of the people that I've talked to, that, you know, both Nolan Hickman's dad and, you know, other people that know recruiting, Coach Cal almost never picked up the phone to call Nolan. It was a very distant, I think Cal liked him, but always wanted him to be a backup option, always wanted him to be kind of a secondary, like what we talked about, a long-term, right, 2-3 year potential option. And I don't think he was ever at the top of his radar, one of his biggest priorities. So,
which you kind of touched on in the sources say, that's why we wanted to ask you about this, because you said he kind of felt like maybe he wasn't going to be the guy, mm-hmm, and they were bringing other people in.
Yeah. His two guys, the only two people that he talks to on the staff, were both, you know, kicked to the curb. They both left. And even when the opportunity presented itself for Cal to kind of fix that situation, and there was an opportunity, I was told that Nolan reached out to Cal, called him, texted him, and said, "Hey, I'm ready to go. You know, let's talk this out. Let's figure this out." And Cal never returned his calls. And it was Jay Lucas in turn called Nolan back and said, "Hey, let me play, you know, middleman between the two of you." And I think that really rubbed them the wrong way. It was just yes, homesickness was a very real thing, but it was more all of the things combined of the two guys that I committed to Kentucky for are no longer there. There's only two other recruits that are signed on right now. I've never met them in my life. Yeah, we've texted and we've, you know, DM'd and all that, but, you know, I don't know these kids. I know absolutely nobody, and I'm, you know, I just spent my whole last year in isolation not knowing anything, and I am about to pack my bags. I mean, they're scheduled to leave and arrive on campus, and his dad told me that they were going to get on campus May 29th. So we're now 10 days away from when he was scheduled to be there. At the time of his decommitment, it was a month, right, exactly a right. month. And he was like, you know, I just got home from a whole year of isolation. You know, I don't want to go across the country to a school that I know nothing about. I've never been on campus. I've never, you know, Coach Cal doesn't really prioritize me. The guys that did prioritize me are no longer there. I don't know the kids that I'm signing with. And on top of everything else, yes, he told me kind of, you know, some stuff behind the scenes. He was like, you know, they would say all the right things to us. You know, Jay Lucas would text me and say, "Yeah, we're excited. You're excited about you coming. You're our guy." You know, but then they'd reach out to another brand new point guard. They'd reach out to this guy. They'd reach out to this guy. And he said there was at one point we counted 10 other point guards that Kentucky was in contact with. And that's when it got to Nolan, kind of went to his dad and said, you know, are they recruiting to those guys to play with me, or are they bringing me in to play with them? And it was kind of an us versus me type deal in his mind.
Right.
And it was a bunch of different things that built up into one big decision for him to leave. And I think a lot of people just took the homesickness quotes out of context and said, "Oh, this kid's soft. He's this and whatever." Like I you know, if you think a kid, you know, traveling across the country is, you know, not wanting to travel across the country is soft, you know, whatever. I don't care about that side of it. I just want to make sure before you call the kid soft and say all these things about it, just know all of the different varying factors. And after knowing all the factors that led up to it, and if you still want to say, "Oh, this kid wasn't built for Kentucky," or whatever, another West Coast kid that doesn't make it at Kentucky, whatever, then that's your opinion. It would always frustrate me when people would just say, pick out the homesickness quotes and say that was the only reason, because there was
that's what I was saying. I was like, there's more to it.
Right. There was always more.
It wasn't, but you know, and it wasn't just the homesickness. There was right.
There's several factors
coming in, like Barbie and Justice both leave. Like we always said that there was a whole lot more to the situation of him decommitting than just being homesick. The good thing is he went to Gonzaga for him.
Right. Yeah.
Now that perception, like if he'd gone to Auburn or Kansas, that then people are going to be like, well, there's no way he was homesick if he went to Auburn or he went to Kansas.
Right, right. Now all the people are saying that he's homesick.
It was, it was funny how quickly the silence just kind of happened after he went, after he ended up signing with Gonzaga. And, you know, even if he had gone, I kind of play this scenario in my head. And it was like, if he had gone to Kansas or if he had gone to Auburn, I would have asked his dad. I was like, I would have been like, so homesickness, you know, how? And
right.
I probably would have gotten a response like, yeah, sure, but at least these coaches made me feel wanted,
right.
Or you know,
right.
At least these recruits made me feel like I, you know, they prioritize me to be their guy. And I've heard some things at Gonzaga that they're not very confident in Hunter Salas as the point guard. And after watching him last week, 2 weeks ago at the Iverson Classic in the practices, I don't think he's a lead guard. I think he's a shooting guard that can't really shoot. I think he's kind of like one of those like Amadou Diallo type players where you know. Brings a lot to the table, but definitely not the guy that you want to be the star point guard. So
there's a reason why he dropped 26 spots.
Yeah, I think that is a very realistic thing, and I think, you know, I hate to say it, but if UK was able to finish the deal with him, I think that would have been a big mistake. I think if he would have been Kentucky's point guard going into next year, it would have been a massive mistake. Him as a, you know, second, third option in that Nolan Hickman role or whatever, you know, as we saw, Nolan Hickman's rated higher than he is in the final rankings anyway. So
right.
Ended up being better at the end of the day, regardless. But I think that would just been, I love the kid, great family, great, you know, I really have a lot of respect for them. I do think he's going to be a good college player, down the road, but he was not the number six player in the country or whatever he was rated at. And I think that was a swing and miss on UK's part, because I do think they missed out on that one as well. There was a lot of stuff that was kind of going on with his recruitment, but that was one that I think at the end of the day, UK will be better off for sure. I think Nolan would have been a fantastic player here, but
we were really excited about Hickman.
He's good, man. I'm telling you, he's good. One of those very, you know, not going to blow you away with athleticism or quickness or speed, but his pace and the way he just kind of controls the game. That game manager, Tyler Ulis type player. I mean, he really has a lot of that just kind of, you know, pure instinct, but, you know, basketball instinct that I think he's going to be super, super successful playing alongside, you know, Chet Holmgren and some of the other players that they have at Gonzaga. I mean, I think that's, he's going to look like a damn superstar over there.
So, and that's what we said. Like our comparison watching, like he reminded me of Shea and Ulis when you watch him on the floor, because he never got sped up. He got to wherever he wanted to, whenever he wanted to. He always seemed to make the right play. You know, there was just, because as Kentucky fans, we always want to, you know, compare these recruits to Kentucky players that we've watched play.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's really unfair to compare him and his game to Shea and Tyler, where some other players, it is a little bit unfair to compare them to a De'Aaron Fox or Malik Monk or somebody like that, or John Wall or something like that. But he's not as big as Shea. You know, he's kind of like right in between Shea and Ulis, but just the way he played on the floor, you just never got the feeling that he was being pushed somewhere he didn't want to go. If he was going some way or doing something, that's what he wanted to do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And another thing that kind of caught me off guard talking to his dad was, I think he was kind of worried. I've heard some things that he, you know, had kind of has some confidence issues, and that he's a swaggy kid, but when push comes to shove, there's some confidence issues there. And I don't think he was confident coming in playing, you know, he was recruiting Ty Washington to Kentucky, but when it kind of became clear that he was coming, the exact quote that his dad gave me was, you know, I'm only 6 foot and Ty is only 6'2" or whatever, you know, where's the size coming from? Like he acknowledged that backcourt was not going to be big enough to, you know, be a difference maker at this level. And I think there were some concerns there about, you know, he would get kind of swallowed up at a place like Kentucky, you know, going up. If he were the, you know, one of a couple other smaller type players, you know, rather than a, you know, I don't know, whatever the case was, but that was definitely something that also played on his mind, was that he knew that he was only 6 foot on the dot, and you know, Kentucky ended up with a guy that's 5'10" anyway, so not like that would have really made that big of a deal. But that was something that he thought about, and he worried about what his effectiveness, effectiveness level would be at Kentucky with the guys that they were going to be bringing in and who they already brought in. So just like I said, a bunch of other things that kind of went into his decommitment that, you know, I don't think trashing the kid and saying he's, you know, he's a wuss for not being able to do this. I just, he's a great kid, great family, a lot. I mean, it was just a lot that went into it. And I think fans should just say, you know, good for him. Hope it works out for him well, and we all move on. I think that's how it should be. Right. UK ended up with you know, two fine replacements. So we'll
right,
just...
right. Well. Final thought with Jack Pilgrim. Where does Kentucky go this year? What is your prediction as of now? Prediction for Kentucky this year.
Ooh, putting me on the spot. after blowing last year with my expectations and my predictions, that was, I mean, that
you weren't alone though.
That scared. That was just such a, I mean, just threw me off so bad, because I watched BJ Boston last year, and I said, he's a guarantee. Yeah. There's no way he's not a 17, 20 point per game scorer. There's just, right. I saw him play probably 20 times with my own two eyes. I mean, legit at different events against varying levels of competition, at the highest of high, like NBPA top 100 camps and you know, EYBL, Peach Jam. I watched him play over and over again, and I said, yes, he's not strong enough, he doesn't drive, you know, he doesn't get inside and take it to the rack hard enough, and you know, I think the strength and his weight is an issue, but he's just so damn talented everywhere else in terms of in shooting and scoring, that I was just like, there's just no way he doesn't make it. And Terrence Clark, I was a huge fan of him. I thought he was kind of a college ready, NBA ready type of player as well, and I mean, I just swung and missed on both of those. And the whole roster, I thought Devin Askew would be, you know, kind of ready for the limelight more than he was. So it definitely scares me a little bit this offseason, after thinking that I knew exactly what was going to happen this past year, knowing what last year's group was.
Give yourself some credit. There were a lot of variables that went into it.
Yeah.
You didn't have all the information that you needed to make a prediction.
COVID year.
COVID year.
But so that's kind of why I'm a little bit more outspoken about Xavier Wheeler's struggles. His advanced numbers are horrible. His shooting numbers are horrible. His turnover numbers are absolutely horrible. He's a very, very high risk, high reward type player that if he can clean up a lot of his stuff, he can be very good. And I think that's kind of, it's just like Devin Askew last year. The team will come and go as Xavier Wheeler plays. If he plays up to his all SEC level potential, and you know, he cuts down to, if he can give me 45% shooting, 33% from three, and 75% from the free throw line, average three turnovers a game, cut it down from 4.4 to three a game, UK can be special. I do. I think Ty Washington sold the way he's able to. I mean, he really has a very strong Emmanuel Quickly vibes. I mean, just the way he's able to ramp up his shooting. It was kind of crazy at the Iverson Classic, that three-point contest. He wasn't going to participate originally. He literally was wearing his sandals and was just, you know, he was just chilling, was just having a good time. And they were going down the list of all these, you know, Bryce Hopkins shot in and some of these other guys that are, you know, can shoot the ball, but definitely not shooters. And he was kind of like looking like, this is the best they're going to come up with. And he said, screw it. He put on his shoes and he said, I'm jumping in. And even the announcer was like, and Ty Washington is about to participate. And he just,
it would have been better if he left his sandals on.
Yeah.
Right.
But he had no warm up time. Like, and he took 2-3 shots to kind of get, you know, get some shooting stroke up. Kind of was a little bit cold to start with. But when he heated, I mean, this is a guy that was just in sandals 2 minutes ago.
Right.
And we were just chilling, and he stepped on and just went, you know, bucket, 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 knocked down, just won the competition. And that was kind of like that was bizarre. That was, I've never seen that before. And then when I saw him play to start with, kind of the same thing, it took him a while to kind of ramp things up, and he was just deferring way too much and you know, kind of way too passive with the ball for my liking. And I was talking to people that I was with, and I was like, man, I don't know about him as a lead guard. And then when it came time for him, the team needed him to put points on the board and make shots, he took the game over, and he knocked down like five straight threes, went to the free throw line on the three. He, you know, knocked down all three of them and, you know, basically took the game over by himself. And it was just like, where the hell did that come from? And he looked so, so good. So I'm sold on him. I think he's an Emmanuel Quickly type guy, where, you know, probably I kind of think that he might be like that summer leading up to sophomore year Emmanuel Quickly, where he's not like, you know, he's not going to be SEC player of the year this year, like year two Emmanuel was. But I think that transition from better than what Emmanuel was as a freshman, but not as good as Emmanuel was as a sophomore. I think that in between is a pretty safe bet for him right now. So, you know, and if Davion Mintz comes back, obviously I'm very high on him. I like, you know, you can't complain about the shooting. That's obviously a massive change. I'm a little worried about defense. I think CJ Frederick is above average as a defender. I think Kellen Grady is solid as a defender, but still those are two prime positions that a lot of long athletic wings in the SEC. I'm interested to see how they defend against those guys. And I'm sold on the front court. I love Oscar Tshiebwe, and I'm really high. I'm was lower on Damian Collins after seeing him in person. I think he's really kind of, I think he might be a 2-year player, but he's kind of a more raw version of Isaiah Jackson, which is kind of hard to believe because Isaiah was so raw going into last year. But you know, I still think he's going to be able to produce next year. So long drawn out story being short, I think this is probably, as it stands right now, a Sweet 16 team that has the potential to be an Elite Eight. Maybe if they get a good shot in the tournament, you know, a good run, they could maybe make a Final Four. But I don't see it as a title winning team. But definitely safe to assume that they're going to make the tournament, which at this point that is a step in the right direction.
Right, right. Yeah. At some point, I was going to be like, so what you're saying was title game?
No.
He's like, hell no.
I'd love that, and I'd love to be on the other end of underwhelming to, you know, go my expectations going into the year and then be pleasantly surprised, then right. Say, oh yep, Xavier Wheeler makes Kentucky national title, you know, contender, and then everybody get pissed off at me again next year.
Right.
I'm gonna avoid that this year.
Keep expectations lower.
I think Sweet 16 is a very safe and comfortable and happy result if that's what it gets, yeah. With the potential of maybe making a run to the Final Four if the field works out the way it very well could.
Right. Well, we definitely appreciate your time, Jack Pilgrim of KSR and the Sources Say podcast, man. We definitely thank you for your time. We know you're a busy guy, and we appreciate you coming on and talking.
For rolling with the time change too.
No problem at all.
Since my dumbass forgot about when my doctor's appointment was.
Right. All right. Yeah. Now, well, I might troll you though and put you out there and say, well, I heard Jack Pilgrim said that we're going to the title game. Yeah.
At this point, people are going to put words in my mouth and say that anyway. So,
right.
I mean, title game did come out of your mouth.
Technically,
so we can cut it up so it sounds like you picked them to go to the title game.
Say, yeah. I said Kentucky's going to the national. There you go. Kentucky's going to the national champ. There's your soundbite if you need
it. Right. There you go.
You guys know exactly if you listen to this. You
right.
Know
exactly. But Sweet 16, man, that's a turnaround. This is a turnaround year. Making the tournament would be a breath of fresh air. I mean, just, you know, fans in the stands, everything that we're going to get back will be better. So, man, definitely yeah. Thank you for your time. Appreciate you, Jack Pilgrim.
Yeah, anytime. This is fun.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
Jack Pilgrim of KSR and the Sources Say podcast. Man, yeah. Jack is great. Fun. You know, it's always fun when you can cut up with some guys and say, so what you're saying? No, I'm not. Right. You know, no. But he's dropped, you know, he's behind the scenes in recruiting. He knows his stuff. He's there. He goes to all these big events and high school games. He knows these recruits. Jack Pilgrim is the guy that you want to follow. So you can do so on KSR and listen to his podcast, Sources Say podcast. So now you know what time it is.
Here we go.
The dumbest shit on Twitter this week. Here we are once again.
Back with some more of the dumbest shit on Twitter.
This week, the dumbest shit on Twitter this week. This is the recruit edition. Yes. Well, I never understood why people tweet at kids or high school right. kids or even college kids for that matter. But I never, other than like I have added at like players before, but like, hey, check this shirt out. Or, you know, it's like a pick that I put some filters on or something like that for them.
Or something that's encouraging to them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm never like, you suck. Bad choice.
We saw a lot of that this year.
Right. It's
just and it's kind of just continued into the off season.
So this is the dumbest shit on Twitter. Just to start it off, this is a comment on Rivals. It looks like double R30 All American Gold Member. Think Cal has done a great job with everything this offseason until this. Hope Willer proves me wrong. Everything about him seems like a smaller, worse Ashton Hagans.
Yeah, because Ashton Hagans was terrible when he was playing for Kentucky. He won co-defensive player of the year his freshman year. Averaged, what, 6 assists a game over the 2 years that he was here? I mean, did he have his deficiencies? Absolutely.
Right.
Nobody's denying that, you know, but
I don't.
He, worse. Ashton Hagans would be like the perfect type of point guard for this team. Just
right.
Like Xavier Wheeler is perfect for this team.
Some people don't get that.
A guy that can get into the lane and make his teammates better by setting them up for easy looks.
Right.
Whether it's from three or dropping passes to the post. Like,
you know, the assists that he had this past year?
Right.
Would have been like number five.
On top five for all time Kentucky for single season. Yeah.
Right.
And I think his career assist number is like top 15.
Yeah. Some people would have. They're missing. Do they watch? No, they don't. Are they watching?
All he did is he looked at his shooting numbers.
Right.
Everybody has said this year his shooting numbers were down.
Yeah, a lot of turnovers.
But to be fair, he averaged about the same amount of turnovers that John Wall did his freshman year. Nobody says anything about that.
Right.
Nobody cares that John Wall turned the ball over 4 times a game. Because John Wall made Kentucky cool again.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about the cool factor. Xavier Wheeler is not going to average 4.4 turnovers a game next year on this Kentucky team. He's surrounded by better players, better shooters than he had
at Georgia.
Right. And he was expected to be the man at Georgia. So
people talking to a recruit. This is the recruiting edition of the dumbest shit on Twitter this week. And I mean, we did get Xavier Wheeler and Ty Washington. Now Matt Jones recruited out. Ty Washington picks Kentucky. Okay, and then, of course, that's not the dumb shit. The only question, UK basketball, Kentucky men's basketball, CoachCal.com. Is he on a knee or is he standing? We will come back when they stand for our country, not kneeling to divide us. All lives matter.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
I don't know what he's trying to say here with cult don't matter unless you matter.
I'm looking at that. Cult don't matter unless.
I think he's trying to say color don't matter.
Unless you make
it matter.
Right.
These people just need to move on. Like, they're beating a dead horse.
Right. I mean,
they're in the minority for Kentucky fans.
Come on, Tony.
All I can do is shake my head.
It's just
I know we're supposed to be talking, but
it's unbelievable at a recruit, you know. And then some people, Arizona fans, were mad, and I think this guy has been on our Twitter shit list before. Bear 520 down.
Maybe.
I think so. Ty Washington, get the hell out of Arizona.
Guess what? He is.
Yeah, he is. Big mad. Big mad he picked Kentucky.
And if you went through any, he broke down that whole, like, he was having some issues, like internal issues, this Bear 520 down when Ty committed to Kentucky.
Oh, he was.
Like, go through his Twitter feed that
day. He was hurt.
He was really hurt. Like, he actually tried to compare Arizona to Kentucky. Like, we are Arizona. Okay.
The dumbest shit on Twitter this week.
He's a habitual Kentucky stepper.
No, brought to you by Arizona
fans. Different levels of basketball program.
Yeah, totally. And just adding at a high school kid.
Right.
Big guy. And then we have Shooter McGavin.
He's not that cool.
Yeah. He says, well, you won't get to enjoy the tournament, but good luck at UK. If getting to the NBA is all that's important, then you can't go wrong with UK or KU. It's funny we stole two Kansas recruits, so to speak. Stole,
right. Two recruits that they were trying.
Right. Right. That's funny.
And
Shooter.
Again, it's Kansas and UK. Like, if you're a point guard, who's had better luck or better, who has a better track record in recent history of point guards in the league?
Right.
It's not KU.
Shooter looks like a grown ass man.
I guess.
You won't make it to the tournament, but if all you care about is going to the NBA, come on, Shooter. That's funny. That's funny.
It's dumb. That's why he's in the dumbest shit on Twitter.
And then we got a couple of tweets here. John says, how did we lose both Hickman and Salas to Gonzaga?
Yep.
Salas only visited one school and Hickman was homesick.
So Breadcat actually had some
reasonable. He was being reasonable. Right. And then Willie Brown. You mean Hickman is a pussy?
Now, me and you both have talked a lot about the Hickman decommitment.
Right.
Him picking Gonzaga kind of put credence that homesickness was a big part of him decommitting and going elsewhere.
Big factor, yes.
Big factor. There's no doubt in either of our minds that Hickman would have been really good at Kentucky. He's probably not going to get the same level of playing time he might have gotten at Kentucky at Gonzaga because they have Salas, because they have Nembhard, and they have the transfer from Iowa State who averaged like 16 or 17 points
right,
at Iowa
right.
State last year.
Yep.
Playing time obviously didn't seem to be a factor. Maybe not a huge factor.
Yeah.
But how can you deny homesickness was an issue and call Hickman a pussy because he wanted to be at home around his family?
Right.
Right? You know, and Salas, is there one Kentucky fan who follows recruiting that was even remotely surprised that he went to Gonzaga? Because true, I wasn't. True.
Yeah, no, I don't think the bigger percent was.
Because of the fact he only was able to visit Gonzaga.
Right.
He was trending away from Kentucky for the last year, almost, before he committed to Gonzaga.
Right.
So, to me, it's not a huge, oh, we missed out on Hunter Salas.
Right.
You know, it's...
I don't know if...
It is what it is.
I don't know if Willie Brown here is a... grown man or not, but it doesn't seem like
who knows
it, so
yeah. Who knows, anybody that's talked shit about a kid in high school isn't a grown man anyway.
No. be better than that.
Be better.
This is the dumbest shit on Twitter this week. What a show. I mean,
yeah, it was great.
Jack Pilgrim of KSR and Sources Say Podcast dropping the inside and then the dumbest Absolutely. Shit on Twitter. And what he was saying kind of blended in with the dumbest shit on Twitter this week, the recruit right. edition. It was, circus-esque. Right. I mean, some people are just crazy, man. And just, you know, so big shout out to Jack Pilgrim. Thanks so much.
Big thanks.
And definitely follow him. Follow his articles on KSR, Jack Pilgrim, yep. and the Sources Say Podcast. Great inside podcast, man, to get you to lower down.
Yeah.
And as for us, great show. Just to end it, any final thoughts, last words?
No. I think a lot of the fans are going to be surprised when they see him out there with this lineup.
Right.
You know, they're just going to look at the Georgia numbers and be like, well, I'm not really sure. But I think they're going to be pleasantly surprised when he's not put in some of the situations he was put in last year at Georgia.
Right.
This next season here at Kentucky.
Right.
And they're going to be really happy with what they see on the floor from you.
I'll make a prediction for him as well. I think he will get a assist single game record.
So he's going over the 16 assists for a single game.
Yeah.
All right.
That's my prediction. And Jack Pilgrim said Sweet 16. So don't, of course, I'm going to put words in his mouth and say title right. game. Like we do all our guests, but just playing around. I'm Jay Hayes, and he is the voice of reason.
J.D. Hall.
And we are Religiously Kentucky.
This was another episode of Religiously Kentucky.
It was great. Thanks for the hospitality.
If you liked this episode, make sure to give us a like. And subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And our opinionated take on the world of Kentucky sports. Religiously Kentucky.